Yeah, we're skipping church too.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Let's go to the Chiefs now, because this offseason, the Chiefs have been the franchise that keeps on giving. All the way through last night, I thought we might just have enough to talk about with Patrick Mahomes finally signing his rookie contract with the Chiefs. No, Tom Bahali on Twitter last night made sure that we all had some more talking points to get us through the rest of this weekend. He went on a tweet storm about playing time, essentially. Some stuff about the organization as a whole, some things about the leadership in the organization and being at OTAs. I tried very hard to get Tom to come on today. I never heard back, which doesn't surprise me. But I'm a little surprised because I just tweeted him a few times, and he was on Twitter retweeting things, including people saying, like, Adam Teicher sucks. And Tommy just responded like, I agree. It was, I thought about seeing if Adam wanted to come on today and hear what it was like to get publicly bodied by Tom Bahali rather unfairly. Because Adam has the stereotype attached to him of just being like the negative, like the party pooper. Even though he's right a lot of the time because he's willing to be honest. And The reason that I have respect for Adam Teicher is the exact same reason I have respect for what Tom Bahali did last night. And if anybody in sports media ends up here crushing Tom Bahali over this next week, my head is going to explode. Because we are in the honesty business. The thing in sports that, for my money, is most toxic to sports is a lack of honesty, a lack of transparency, a lack of genuine emotion. You don't have to tell me why you've made every decision you've ever made. I don't have to know your game plan going into the game. But I hate whenever baseball represses young superstars by having old pitchers throw at them if they bat flip too high. And I don't mind seeing somebody fling his bat into the ground in disgust after a weak pop up. Sports are built on genuine emotion. We think we like sports because we're watching people do things that we are not capable of doing. We watch these like crazy athletic feats. But there's a lot more emotion in it than that. Because if that was the case, we could watch World's Strongest Men competitions and watch these guys built like human muscle orbs just lift trees over their heads. And you go, wow, that's crazy. I super can't do that. You let all of these super strong men line up and then just fold chunks of metal together. And then all of a sudden they're throwing an actual airplane. That's an act of physical incredibility that we don't give a bleep about. Who cares? When do we care? Whenever the emotion is in. We're invested in our teams, our players. Why do we get invested in our teams and our players? Because we connect with their emotions. It's infuriating whenever Travis Kelce does something that costs the team 15 yards. But I will never be upset with Travis Kelce for showing genuine emotion. I'm just not gonna be. I don't want Marcus Peters to punt a football into the stands and then incur a penalty. But the time that he did it and did not incur a penalty was great. So you do have to have some balance of, you know, you don't want to hurt the, you don't want to actively harm the team. But You don't want to actively repress your entire machine. And it's also the way that sports radio lives and sometimes dies. If you suck all of the emotion and the honesty out of sports radio, what do you have left? You have box scores. Anybody can read a box score. If Adam Teicher was a cheerleader for the Chiefs, I'm using Adam Teicher because in case you missed it, Tom Bahaly crushed Adam Teicher for some reason. I think actually Teicher tweeted that, like, Tamba can do this, but it's not going to change anything. Something like that. I'm misquoting him. But Adam Teicher could be a Chiefs cheerleader, not literally. I mean, maybe. I don't know what kind of hops Teicher has. But Teicher could be a rah-rah guy, and it would greatly diminish what I think of his reporting. Give me your honest opinion. Tell me what you're honestly thinking and feeling. That's what Tom Bahaly did last night. Here are a few tweets that Arrowhead Addict put together, some of the highlights. And there were more than this, but these are some of the highlights. All things that Tom Bahaly tweeted last night. Fans should know this. Only played 7 snaps last year in the 2017 playoff game against the Steelers. I was told the reason I wasn't playing was that they wanted me fresh for the playoff. Can someone explain to me how I played 58 snaps in the first game when we made the greatest comeback in Chiefs history? Watching both Steelers game from sidelines and playing 15 and 7 in the last game, I'm still lost. Am I needed in KC anymore? I was healthy last year and the year before. I had a scope, not a major procedure. The result of playing for a long time. I haven't missed any offseason workouts in 11 years with the Chiefs. I've played in every game except 4 in my 11-year career with the Chiefs. Let's look at the Super Bowl champs. I'm sure they have 100% attendance for OTAs and off-season workouts this year. I may be wrong. He may be wrong. I haven't seen any refuting that yet, though. That, in all caps, OTAs and off-season workouts, seems like a pretty clear shot at Eric Berry, Justin Houston, and Marcus Peters. Those guys were not at OTAs. Andy Reid, it doesn't matter. It seems like Tom Bahaly thinks it does matter. I'm a team player first, anything for the team, yet I'm not done knocking QB heads off, but 7 plays won't cut it. I've played through all my injuries that I've acquired through my career, not sitting out because I did not feel I wouldn't be at my best. I play because I love the game, and I did it under some of the worst conditions. No, I'm not high or drunk, I just want to play more football. And some of the responses to this, again, were really confusing to me. Because I genuinely, and it seems like Tamba and Therese Paylor have a good relationship, because Therese was tweeting things and Tamba was retweeting some of them. And according to Paylor, first of all, Tamba did take this to the team. I think it was, he said, after the Steelers game. He said, what's going on here? Why is this happening? Why am I not getting more playing time? It sounds like Tamba did handle this in-house and then just brought it out to the public last night. But here's some responses to it that I just simply don't get. Somebody tweeted, I had a lot of respect for Tom Bahaly. This isn't a good look, though. Seems like a guy begging to get cut. I don't understand that. Why would you lose respect for a guy who's being honest about his frustrations? That is so rare in sports. It's so rare because the response is like that. Because so often genuine emotion is butted up against by people who want their sports to stay repressed. You should appreciate that kind of honesty. Someone tweeted at Therese and said, you have to wonder why Holly decided to take this public on social media leading up to the week of camp. Why not bring it up earlier and in-house? Paylor said he did bring it up internally. He was told at his exit meeting in January with Coach Reed to, quote, keep getting better. Which isn't really something you say to a 10-year vet. But I imagine that left a sour taste in Tamba's mouth. Paylor also said, it's my understanding that Tamba still wants to be a Chief. He just wants to play more and contribute to this team like he thinks he can. He just wants to play more and contribute to the team like he thinks he can. Isn't that the truth for literally every competitive driven person? Don't we all want to do more and contribute more as we think we can if you're in a job that you love? Why wouldn't you let people know that? I'm not bothered at all by Thomas saying that. I'm not bothered by it at all. We're just not used to that kind of honesty in sports. And as I mentioned earlier, Paylor said that Tomba was ticked after the Pittsburgh game. Never said anything publicly. So for those people asking, well, why tweet about it now? Why have it come up now, right before training camp? Have you ever been angry about something for 6 months? Eventually, that's going to get to you, right? You should just try to deal with this, internalize it for 6 months. Eventually, you go, you know what? Now seems like a good time to tweet about it. Because why repress it? I don't understand a bunch of people in the honesty business or a bunch of people watching this emotional game trying to say, hey, be less emotional, be less honest. Don't tell me what you're actually feeling. Don't tell me what you actually want. Suck it up and play. Be a robot. If sports were filled with robots, everyone would hit like Aaron Judge, and everyone would be as interesting as Derek Jeter. Every press conference would bore you to tears. You want robots playing your game. You want workmanlike behavior in your sports, and I just don't get it. And I know in a lot of cases, it's kind of a generational thing. And if that's the case, then maybe it's just whatever you grew up with. But I don't need my outside linebackers to be who takes that lunch pail to work with him every day. Sits down, shuts up, hits the quarterback, gets out, gets CTE, retires. I don't need that for my sports. Give me that truthfulness that Tomba brought. 913-3810-810 is the phone number here if you have any interest in sharing a different opinion, or if you agree, whatever. I'm always cool taking calls that agree with me. But I don't fully comprehend any of the vitriol-filled responses that ended up getting thrown Holly's way. It's just kind of bizarre to me. I don't know. Also, the other thing that you can call in and talk about, and we'll spend more time later on the show doing this as well, is I'm wondering where you, if you're a Chiefs fan, where you're at with the Chiefs now. Because this offseason's been nuts. They cut Jamal Charles. They drafted Patrick Mahomes. They cut Jeremy Maclin. They extended Andy Reid. They fired John Dorsey. They signed Pat Mahomes. Tom Bahali went on a tweet storm about not getting enough playing time. It's a pretty good offseason timeline there. Also, Monday is going to be amazing. Because Monday is the introductory press conference for Brett Veach. So Clark Hunt will be taking, I guarantee, questions about Hunt and Dorsey. She'll be taking questions about Tomba's tweet storm. Maybe eventually they'll even get to talking about Brett Veach. I don't know. But I look forward to Monday. Because whatever happens there, there's going to be a lot of material. I'm sure someone is going to ask some sort of question that feels like a terrible waste of time. It's like, now, what's your strategy going in the training camp? What? What do you mean? We're going to get good players. Okay. But I'm going to say like 90% of the questions tomorrow are going to be really intriguing. And I'm guessing that Clark Hunt will sort of dodge them all as a professional because that's kind of what he does. I don't think he's going to say anything super insightful, but I will certainly be listening. I'm sure you can find all sorts of coverage for that here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. I don't know if we'll carry it live. Maybe we'll carry it live. If not, we'll have clips of it the rest of the day. I'm sure. Probably even have it live. Just don't really know for sure. Beard says probably. There we go. Now I can say that Beard said it. Beard says it'll be here live. So I was going back to the Chiefs earlier today, and I was looking at the schedule. We have a laminated 2017 Chiefs schedule on the wall in the studio now. I was looking at the schedule. I was thinking about all of the ups and downs. Thinking about all of the changes that have already happened to this team. Someone somewhere on Twitter was asking, are the Chiefs better off this off season? After this offseason, I think Mick brought it up on Sports Sunday on Sunday Sound Off last week. Are the Chiefs better off now than they were the day after they lost to the Steelers in the playoffs? And first of all, what a ridiculous question in most circumstances. Are you better after an offseason of doing nothing but trying to get better? I would hope so. And I actually think the Chiefs are. As a franchise, as a 2017 team, they're probably not. I think this season, it has all of the signs of a regression season. Because they swept the AFC West last year. That's not going to happen again. They have a harder general schedule this year than they did last year. They lost a major offensive weapon in Jeremy Maclin. They're going to have a deeper running game this year as long as Kareem Hunt doesn't get hurt or something. If maybe Spencer Ware stays healthier, then that will be a big part of it. But I'm not sure that I have much faith in the 2017 Chiefs being a better team than the 2016 Chiefs. Yeah, you get a healthier Justin Houston. You get a healthier Dee Ford. You get Tom Bahali, however much he gets used. But I think the Chiefs' defense still is largely fragile. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I think if Marcus Peters gets hurt, the whole defense just starts to crumple. All of a sudden, you're playing Philip Gaines up against Antonio Brown. And then the game is over. In that moment, the game just ends. I think the Chiefs have some fragility issues. If the meaningful guys stay healthy, then they can absolutely win the division. But the thing beyond that, that at this point is giving me pause, is making me sad/worried about this upcoming season. It's the fact that I just don't see the path for the Chiefs to get to a Super Bowl. I'm not going to look at the NFC right now and be like, how do they win it? Who do they match up well against in the Super Bowl? Not even worried about that. I don't see them having anything for the Patriots. And we're going to find out week one, obviously, how it starts out. But especially in a playoff game, I just don't see the Chiefs having anything for New England. They went and got Brandon Cooks. They won the Super Bowl and then got better. Who does that? They Golden Stated. They won the Super Bowl and went and got Brandon Cooks. The Warriors lost the finals without Draymond Green and then went and added Kevin Durant. That's what the Patriots are doing right now. They're Golden Stating. Which I think in a lot of ways is, from a lot of angles, it's the reason that the Chiefs ended up drafting Patrick Mahomes. Not because they're trusting the process, but because
This offense is so limited right now. Its hands are tied. Travis Kelce is a monster, and I actually went to Twitter. You can always tweet me at JB Briscoe. Ding, shot, everybody drink. You can tweet me there any questions you have. I'm always down, especially for Chiefs questions, because I feel like I'm, you know, actually equipped to answer them. If you ask me about like SEC football, I'll have to like block you. No mercy. No mercy at all. If you ask me about SEC football, I'm just going to block you. I think that's a good policy. But I find at this point that I have very little hope and very little optimism about the offense doing anything against teams that are better than the Chiefs are. Does that make sense? I think the Chiefs will do fine whenever they end up playing the Jets. I think the Chiefs will handle the Jets. And they'll probably beat the Chargers twice, blah, blah, blah. But whenever they have to go to Foxborough or to Pittsburgh, or apparently at home against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, I just don't see this team having the firepower, which is why one reason I keep going back over and over again to Patrick Mahomes. Because I know that running with a rookie quarterback is going to give you a severely limited entire offense for a little while. I know that starting Patrick Mahomes gives you limitations. He's still learning the system, and he's still learning how the NFL works, and he's still getting up to the speed of the game. I get it. But you're also severely limited with Alex Smith. No matter what, the Chiefs are dealing with limitations. The offense will be limited one way or another. And I don't really want to do this. I wasn't ever planning on calling for Mahomes in July. But I'm at least more interested in seeing what a limited, what Mahomes' limitations look like compared to what Alex Smith's limitations look like. Because at least we're familiar with Alex Smith's. 913-318-1810 is the number to call if you think I'm an idiot. Or whatever. If you agree. Cool. That's also fun. I just feel like that there's a weird... We're at a weird place right now with the Chiefs. Where I feel like half of the fan base is like, you know what? Bleep it. Let's see what Mahomes can do. Let's at least find out, right? Let's see if he can take his... Because he got a really good supporting cast as far as the talent on defense. It's a bit fragile, but it looks really good at the top. He's got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Tyreek Hill is not going to be used well enough with Alex Smith. Alex Smith is not going to use Tyreek Hill appropriately. Even if you think it's a double you know, double you don't kind of thing. I actually think that means the inverse, right? Better the double you know. Unless the double you know is Alex Smith. In which case, give me the double you don't know. We've got to have a recurring Origins of the Idiom segment, because every few weeks this comes up. I keep meaning to make a liner for it. Not to work on today. 913-318-1810 is the phone number. Let's go to Leo. Leo, you are on Sports Sunday. What's on your mind?
I agree with everything you say about the quarterback situation. However, you and everybody else say we've lost a major offensive weapon when we lost Macklin. Well, we didn't if we're using our current quarterback. If Mahomes is in, we have.
I'm cool with that. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think it's pretty undeniable that, and maybe I'm calling Macklin a major weapon right now, puts a little bit of a misnomer on it. I would say, though, that Macklin definitely is an offensive weapon. He was very good out of the slot over the last few years also. Which is where Alex Smith can use him very well. That wasn't really being used that way in the offense very much last year. But I would say at the very least, I would contend that Macklin is a usable offensive weapon. And whenever you're looking at who is replacing
him in the lineup being, be it Albert Wilson or DeMarcus Robinson or Jehu Chesson, that at that point, kind of every weapon offensively is a major offensive weapon. But I see where you're coming from, and I buy that a little bit.
All right. That's all I have.
All right, Leo, I appreciate it. I thank you for the call.
Thanks.
I like that idea that that Macklin's a bigger loss Macklin's a bigger loss if you are going with Mahomes anytime soon. Because I have been thinking of it kind of differently. Because again, Jeremy Macklin over the last 3 years, I think Pro Football Focus had him as like the third most proficient slot receiver as far as catching touchdowns out of the slot over the last 3 or 4 years. It's off the top of my dome, but I think that's about right. And so Smith could have been using Jeremy Macklin this year more efficiently, more effectively last year and then also this year. But Macklin would have had a whole different skill set shine with a cannon-armed quarterback tossing them on his general direction. But I'm guessing we're not going to see Patrick Mahomes anytime soon. But I am very excited for training camp. I'm very excited for the preseason, because if Mahomes gets a hot start, if he can start to convince Andy Reid that maybe the window this year is actually most open with Patrick Mahomes behind center, I think Andy Reid will do what's best for the team. I do not think that Andy Reid is going to self-sabotage in any way. I think if he starts Alex Smith, and if he sticks with Alex Smith for all 16 games, I think he'll do that because he thinks it's genuinely the best thing for the team. But I've been wrong before.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad, even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Josh Briscoe. Beards McFly, Nathan Wilhelm, running the board. Let's go back to the Chiefs, because that's where we belong. And I got tired talking about the Royals earlier, because I'm saying the same things over and over. But the place the Chiefs are at currently, I find supremely interesting. Because this offseason has been tumultuous. We talked about Tom Bahaly earlier. If you missed it, you can check the podcast later on 810WHB.com. But I was thinking about the state of the Chiefs, talking about a little bit earlier on, and I was going through the schedule, just poking around. And they play at New England, they play at the Giants, versus the Steelers, at the Cowboys. They got two games against the Raiders and two games versus the Broncos. Those are 9 challenging games. You want to say they win those 2 home games against the Raiders and the Broncos, lock those up. 7 tough games there. I feel like you've got 5 or 6 losses in that section. Optimistically, let's say 5. Let's say 5 and they lose one more game somewhere else in the schedule that they shouldn't lose. It seems like they're usually good for one of those. And it feels like we're staring at a 10-6 football team. And even if we're not, even if they end up being 11-5, if you prop them up a little bit, I don't see this team having the makeup as currently constituted to handle the Patriots or Steelers in the playoffs. It's one of those things where maybe, you know, you play it, you play the game 10 times, and the Chiefs win a couple of them. I don't think it's a completely hopeless endeavor. But it's one of those things right now for me where I am going to need to see it before I believe that it's a possibility. I've walked into that too many times. I've been told too many times that the Chiefs actually can beat the Steelers in the playoff game. I've been told too many times that New England actually is fallible if you just get pressure up the middle. And man, I do think the defense this year, if it stays as a healthy collective unit, I think the defense this year is going to be an absolute treat to watch. Because across the whole defense, you've got some of the best players at their position. The safeties go three deep as well as anyone in the league with Barry and Ron Parker and Daniel Sorensen. Marcus Peters is a rising star. Terrence Mitchell had an extremely good stretch last year, to the point where I'm willing to say I believe in Terrence Mitchell as a number two corner. I think he's more legit as a number two corner than he is Marcus Cooper. The outside linebackers go three deep when healthy. I think Tom Bahaly could use more snaps, especially because last year the pass rush was just not good enough. If you get a healthy Justin Houston, you're bringing in an MVP caliber player that's basically been a non-factor for 2 years. D. Ford, before his hamstring injury and moving back to the other side of the field, was tremendous. But he got hurt around the same time that he moved back to the right side of the defense when Justin Houston returned. Maybe you get a healthy and productive D. Ford. You get Tom Bahaly, even if he's the third guy that gets some consistent snaps, I think you're getting some good production from him as well. The inside linebacker spot, you have Derek Johnson, maybe a step slower, but if healthy, we're saying that a lot, but if healthy, a rock in the middle. Then you're going to get a really interesting training camp battle between Josh Malga and Justin March Lillard and Ramique Wilson to play beside Derek Johnson. All three of those guys do some things really well and have some deficiencies. I would give the edge right now to Ramique Wilson, but I love some things we've seen from Justin March. The defensive line is in great shape. Benny Logan coming in for Dontari Poe. I think in a lot of ways, for what the Chiefs do defensively, might actually be an upgrade. Losing Jay Howard is a little bit frustrating, but yeah, you have Chris Jones and Alan Bailey with Tano Passanio being the third guy in that rotation. The defense is really, really talented. And Bob Sutton is pretty good at using good weapons. Bob Sutton generally finds the deficiency and then covers up for it. But whenever this defense is really, really good is when Bob Sutton doesn't have to cover up a defensive deficiency. Because he can make up for the pass rush not being especially effective, but it's going to limit some of the advantages you would have had otherwise. Does that make sense? He can help contain a running game whenever your run defense is falling apart. But you're going to suffer in the pass rush. Or you're going to suffer in your ability to cover the tight end because your safety is playing like a deep linebacker more than they're playing like an actual covered safety. But if this defense can more or less keep its health, then I think Bob Sutton has a chance to really go to town, to really spend his effort not in covering up deficiencies, but to spend his effort in maximizing the strengths and to eventually overwhelm offenses. That's the thing about this team that I'm most excited about. But the offensive side of the ball is killing me. Because I think the Chiefs are going to have maybe the best special teams unit in football. And they're probably going to have a top 7 defense with a ceiling all the way up and a floor that's probably no lower than 15. Offensively, I really struggle. I struggle to buy into what the Chiefs can actually accomplish. And I asked for questions on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. I asked for questions yesterday, and Ty DeClaire has been supporting the show since it was supporting me talking since I was doing it strictly on a podcast basis. Ty tweeted in and asked, are we understanding... I'm sorry, excuse me. He wrote it fine. I can't read. He said, are we underestimating just how good Travis Kelce is? We focus on not having wide receivers when Kelce... I quote, when Kelce can poop on a defensive coordinator's game plan all day. End quote. And I think that we do often undervalue how good Travis Kelce is. And I think sometimes we are reminded of that whenever he gets some national attention, whenever national writers and analysts talk about how he's actually clearly the second best tight end in football, might even challenge Gronkowski. But the reason that we do that isn't because we're not watching closely enough. It's because we're also watching whenever he's not in the game. Or whenever he's on the field but not getting targets. So, from my point of view, we end up undervaluing Travis Kelce because the Chiefs underutilize Travis Kelce. We see some flashes, but I don't think we treat him in Kansas City as a number one receiving option when he really is. Rob Gronkowski in New England is their number one offensive weapon. Travis Kelce absolutely has that in him as well. The problem is, I just don't think those guys are used the same way. Travis Kelce doesn't get the type of targets that he needs to be considered the number one offensive weapon. And I think part of that has to be given to Andy Reid, and part of that has to be given to Alex Smith. Because I think Reid often tries to get too cute and tries to bring in Albert Wilson to throw off the defense whenever the only thing you need to throw off the defense is Travis Kelce with his hand in the air. Because I saw some GIFs. Seth Kizer was putting out some GIFs, I think it was this week, where Travis Kelce beats a corner just running by him. You've got a tight end on this team who can outrun cornerbacks, who can out-jostle linebackers, and can obviously do the opposite to the other position. He's an impossible weapon. And Tyreek Hill has a lot of that in him as well, not where he can out-jostle a linebacker, but where he is an impossible matchup to deal with. And for both of those guys this year, assuming we do end up with an Alex Smith quarterback team, which I think is still the odds-on favorite, I don't think he's going to be the quarterback next year. I think that is a foregone conclusion. But I think he will be this year, even though it's kind of frustrating. Because I think I've seen this show. Last year for me, I went into last year saying, this is it. This is Alex Smith's year. It's just him. Nobody breathing down his neck. He's got his weapons. He's got the best set of weapons he's ever had. He's got Andy Reid. He's been in the system for long enough. There's no uncertainty here. Andy Reid's not going to withhold things from Alex Smith because he's still new or he's only been in the system for 2 years. This is the time. This is when we're going to find out what the offense can be. And the offense last year had the fifth best starting average starting field position in football and was like 19th in touchdowns scored. That's where we're at with this offense as it currently stands. I stopped believing in Alex Smith's ability to be better than that last year. So did Andy Reid because they went and drafted Patton Mahomes. And if we have to sit through a whole season of that again, of great field position and great defense and an offense that settles for field goals and conservative passes that end up in punts, if that's the reality we live with this season, I'm gonna be despondent by week six. But I think the defense is in really good shape. And I want to believe in the offense. We're going to talk to Cody Tapp here coming up next segment about, we'll do some Chiefs and some Tampa talk. He talked to Pat Mahomes' agent. I want to hear what he thought was most interesting from that conversation. We'll see what he's thinking about the Royals and all sorts of things going on. We'll talk to that next segment, a little more Chiefs in there. And then we'll spend the last half hour of the show doing even more. I want to bring back some things that Seth Kizer said last week, in case you missed it, about Patrick Mahomes. If you're still on the fence about the possibility of him being an option this year, I'll try to sell you on it, but I think Seth might do an even better job. But coming up next, it's going to be Cody Tapp talking about everything under the sun, including himself, because I think he's outside of the T-Bones game. So I'm going to ask him what it's like being under the sun as I sit in this studio where the air conditioning is at its lowest possible setting.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
LeBron or Jordan? Hitler or Stalin? Next!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I haven't heard that one in a while, Beard. That's good. Welcome back to the show, Sports Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, if you, a filthy peasant, a commoner, have ever wanted to see Cody Tapp in the flesh, today might be your lucky day. You might be able to grace your peasant eyes on true royalty. Cody Tapp joins the show now. Cody, where can all of these lowly peons see you today?
I am at Community America Ballpark for the T-Bones game.
Aha!
Where I assume that you were going to come out here and we could recreate our food eating contest for 50 cent hot dogs.
Oh, well, listen, super tempting. I'm probably going to pass, but if we get Schlotzky's back in, I could probably convince myself to do that one more time.
Yeah. I mean, might as well. That's the kind of radio we typically do. And unlike Brett Veach, I'm a real person.
That's true, right?
Seen in real life.
Right, you can see Cody Tapp, future GM of the Chiefs. Just give it enough time, eventually they'll move down the chain of command that often. Well, first of all, why are you at Community America Ballpark?
We're just out here trying to, you know, it's National Hot Dog Day, I guess, either this week or I think it was this week, technically.
I thought this was America.
We're out here at the T-Bones, again, 50 cent hot dogs, and then they've got beer and steak specials and the whole deal. So just out here at Community America Ballpark on a slightly less than hot day.
All right.
Getting ready to eat some hot dogs. Plain and simple.
Very good. This is America, so if we could just please clear
T-Bone
up that every day is hot dog day. So I'm not gonna have any of that like hot dog day garbage considered making anyone think that every day is not hot dog day.
America's national hot dog country here.
Yes, that's exactly right. I'm pretty sure that was invented in Europe somewhere, but we just took it, made it ours. Like that's our whole thing.
Yeah, that's what we did with pizza. I mean, it's fine.
Oh yeah. Apparently, like, actual Italian pizza is super lame, and that we as Americans have saved pizza.
Yeah, theirs is, like, thin and wispy, and there's not enough cheese.
Nothing in America.
Of the things that I want in a pizza.
No, nothing in America is thin or wispy. Never.
No.
Not even our clouds. so you mentioned Brett Veach being currently a specter, but we might actually see him take a human form on Monday. Whenever he and Clark Hunt address the media in a press conference. Are you going out to that press conference tomorrow?
I am, and they finally did one smart thing this offseason, which is, you know, at first it was making it sound like Veach and Clark Hunt were going to share a press conference, but as the news comes down further, they're going to separate those two guys.
Oh, good. Okay, interesting.
So Clark Hunt's going to talk first.
Okay.
And then after Clark Hunt talks, then Brett Veach will talk, which is actually, like, to put them on the same day is still bad.
Yeah.
But at least separating them, so the Veach's press conference, much like, you know, Dave Moore's when he got hired here, isn't just bombarded by why did you fire John Dorsey questions.
Right.
So they at least separated a little bit, but still, there are even questions for Veach on that front. Don't you want to ask Veach, you know, what his relationship was like?
Absolutely.
With John Dorsey? Yeah. It's just not, and then all the Tom Bahali stuff, like there wasn't enough to talk about. Like,
right.
I thought tomorrow was going to be a circus anyway.
Yes.
Because then Reed talks in the afternoon, but then they toss on Tom Bahali to boot.
So all three of them are talking tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, full day.
We're in St. Joe tomorrow at like 2:30 or 3.
Oh, fantastic! That's so exciting. So what are you looking forward to asking each of them? What's sort of on the top of your mind? What's on the top of your reporter's notebook for each of those three guys?
Well, Clark Hunt, he's going to get asked first and foremost. Why did he fire John Dorsey?
Right.
What was the disagreement that led to it? And why the timing of it? Because that still doesn't make any sense unless something changed. So, what changed? Like, he's gone through and said, oh, we do an evaluation process. Well, don't you think it's stupid to do an evaluation process after the draft?
Right.
Shouldn't you be evaluating your guy before you allow him to handle very important responsibilities? Because we all agree, right, that something clearly changed.
Of course.
In the dynamics.
Yes.
From the draft, like, whether it was drafting Mahomes, which, based on all accounts I can get from the organization, it wasn't.
Right.
So whether it was Mahomes all the way up through there, so Macklin, or lack of communication, or, you know, if salary cap issues kept coming up, or if John Dorsey asked for a bunch of money and they didn't want to pay him, something changed that they decided to let him go. For Hunt, those are the big questions. And for Brett Veach, knowing what his relationship is like with John Dorsey is important because, you know, it's one thing. I told Beers, we were on the show on Friday, it's one thing to not request a guy get fired. And this goes for Andy Reid, too. It's one thing to be like, I don't think Andy Reid went in there and be like, hey, get rid of John Dorsey. But Clark Hunt might have gone to him and said, hey, we're thinking about getting rid of John Dorsey.
Right.
And he clearly didn't exactly go to bat for the guy, right?
Right, right.
Because Andy Reid, who's negotiating a 5-year contract, had gone to bat for John Dorsey. I imagine he might still be here.
The question that I would want to ask Clark Hunt, are you flying a plane right now? I just hear like a wind tunnel.
No, sorry.
That's okay.
I'll turn away from it.
Please. The question that I would ask Clark Hunt tomorrow, and feel free to pirate this because clearly I'm producing gems here. And again, you are royalty. You shouldn't have to get your hands dirty like this. But I don't know why that is how I decided to go with this interview or whatever. I don't know how I decided to make everyone below you. I don't know why I made you king of the planet, but I guess that's what we're doing today, I guess. I don't.
It's pretty accurate.
Beard just marked it, though, so that'll be a liner for one of us eventually. King Cody Tapp. But the thing that I would ask Clark Hunt would be, do you think that John Dorsey mismanaged the roster? Because that's a question that I think his instinct would be to say no to. But then if he says no to that question, if he doesn't throw John Dorsey under the bus in that way, then he is very blatantly admitting that something else went wrong. And I would like to believe that then someone else would follow that question up with, wait, so if that wasn't it, then what?
Yeah, what did he do bad at his job?
Right. And if you say, what did he do bad at his job, he's going to kick around that in a way that will never give anything. But if people line up and say, was it this, or was it this, or was it this, or was it this, then eventually you're going to get him narrowed down to a place where he says something of substance.
Or at least doesn't say it as affirmatively as he does other things.
Sure.
You say, hey, did he mismanage the locker room? He's like, no, we didn't think that was part of John Dorsey's problem.
Right.
Did he mismanage the cap?
Yep.
And he's like, hey, we had some problems. You know, we wish
yes,
we'd gotten some
exactly.
And you're like, bingo, there
exactly.
That's the one. Yeah, no, and there'll be plenty. You know, like I keep saying, I'm going to ask him these questions. Doesn't matter. There's a room full of people that have a whole
of
bunch
course.
Of questions for Hunt and then for Veach and then for Reid. And Reid, on top of it, think about, you know, him and the pummeling me with questions part.
Mm-hmm.
Now OTAs, that whole line of questioning is back
it's
in
back.
Play.
Yes.
Because Tom Mahaly questioned it.
Yes.
Like, he brought it back, and not just brought it back for this year. He brought it back for good.
Yes.
Anytime somebody misses again, it'd be like, instead of just asking him, hey, do you have a problem? Hey, you hear from any of your players? Anybody complaining about guys who are missing OTAs? Because you can't tell me it doesn't matter because it's bothering one of the leaders on your defense.
And that was, whenever we're talking about OTAs, that my general stance on it was, I don't care about OTAs, no one else should. The only way this becomes a problem is if someone looks at Eric Berry and says, why isn't Eric Berry here? I did not expect that guy to be Tom Mahaly. That
no.
What was so? I guess with that being said, what was your general takeaway from that tweet storm last night?
He has a point, but I don't think that airing it out in that way is going to get him anywhere. Like, to only play 7 snaps in a playoff game, and you can go back through, and there are some metrics that support the fact that he can get close to the quarterback but can't get there, and then there are support that he, like, his percentage of snaps to getting pressure, he was one of the highest in the NFL, just getting pressures. Despite his limited number of snaps. So there's an argument to be made about his lack of playing time, but what I can't imagine. It's a terrible idea to go out there and just fire it off. And some of it is just being thrown aback by the fact that athletes, especially NFL players, practically never do this.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that is like, well, maybe you should just appreciate it because we ask for answers
yes.
and don't get them a lot. And this time he gave us something. So maybe I should look into it. It was the way in which because he started to attack people too.
You're right, Adam Teicher. Adam Teicher got bodied on Twitter.
No, it's that's the part of it where you're like, okay, you, Or like when he was responding back, like somebody said, hey, but what is Arians done to? He's like, now you know. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, well, you could have, like, there was a way to do this. You could have just simply waited for one of those one-on-ones, which we would eventually all ask for in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about it a little bit on the like, Arrowheads Abroad. Like,
right, yes.
Of course, that's a podcast I don't subscribe to.
Yes.
And might not have listened to 45 minutes of his album talk leading up to it.
Right.
I'm
so mad about that, too, by the way, because I asked to do that. I was so down to talk to Tom Bahali about music. Ugh, I was so ready.
Oh, I would have done that, too. No. But to listen to 40, like, I want to talk to him about it. But he could have just, like, the time to address it was coming.
Yeah.
He was going to be in front of media. Someone could have said, hey, so how are you feeling? He's like, I feel fine. Like, I felt fine last year. I felt like I could have played more snaps in the playoff game. I could have made a bigger impact. And then it'd be like, uh-oh, Tom Lee's trying to tell us something here. Let's pull that thread.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not to say, like, that Twitter can't be a voice of your reason. This is Trump's America, right?
Oh, yes. Someone mentioned that.
Yeah, it can just be your outlet of frustration, yep. I guess. But, you know, it's the way in which he did it does not look great. I'm not bothered by the sentiment. I get every, like, that's the same thing. I am not surprised that every athlete thinks they should play more.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a single guy on this earth that's not like, I should play less. No,
right.
They all think they should play more. They all think they're better than the guy above them. And then he even, like, he said complimentary things, too. Someone said, hey, do you need D4 or something?
Yes.
With this attack? And he's like, no, I think he's going to lead the league in sacks.
Yes. Well, see,
which means, okay, so do you hate Justin Houston? Because you're calling out the OTA things. You're saying you should play more.
Yes.
Those two guys play your position. So is it Houston you dislike?
That, and see, this is why I think he went with Twitter. Because I'm sure someone tweeted at him, do you hate Justin Houston? And he chose not to acknowledge that one. I think that's why he went with Twitter as the medium. Because he could say what he wanted and didn't have to say what he didn't want to say.
Well, and if he's a viable athlete, then using those three guys in a true rotation is a good thing. Because fresh, and all three guys can get to quarterback, and okay, great. I mean, there's no real complaints there, but he is signing his warrant out of Kansas City. They can't cut him this year.
Right.
He's more to cut than keep.
Yes.
They can get rid of him next year, and I don't know. And he's going to be a Ring of Honor player.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, maybe. Depending on how this goes over, it could take longer, but he's definitely going to be a Chiefs Hall of Famer. He's, you know, he is an all-time Chiefs great, and this was just so out of character. That's why I'm a little more understanding of it, because his frustration had to be at an all-time high to feel like he had to go off like that.
We're talking to Cody Tapp of Sports Night. I agree that it just had to be festering in a way that had to be there for a long time to eventually get him to that point. I'm still glad to hear an athlete be honest, because that's the whole point of all of this is emotions and honesty and what you're rooting for and getting guys true emotions. I'm never going to criticize a guy for doing that. It frustrates me whenever Travis Kelce gets a penalty by doing it, but I'm going to always do my best to never criticize genuine emotion existing.
Oh, I loved when he said that, you know, the guy shouldn't work at Foot Locker. Like, I thought it was great.
Right, yes.
I love, that's what I want.
Yes.
Like, it's so often we don't get an answer at all. I love when I get an answer. I just thought that the way he did it was weird. Not the sentiment behind it, just the way that he did it was weird.
But you said, honestly, like, the Trump thing is kind of a joke. And also, like, Donald Trump doesn't go out in front of the press to say everything that he tweets. Because those tweets are very controlled. You don't have to deal with the responses to it. So I don't know if Thomas thing was that calculated, or if he was just really, really upset after holding it in for 6 months and his phone was right there. But I digress for now. The other thing,
I promise you, they will not make Tom Bahali super available. I can't be for sure, but there's a pretty good chance. They've got a lot of control at training camp about who they make available, who they don't. I guess Tom Bahali's down the line a little bit.
I'm guessing you're probably on the nose there. You talked on Sportsnet. You talked to Lee Steinberg, Patrick Mahomes' agent, after Mahomes signed. What were your biggest takeaways from that interview? What stood out to you? What was interesting?
Well, between Lee Steinberg and then Mellinger's article the next day,
uh-huh.
we can officially put to bed, you know, like, I think one of the prevailing theories, at least in the early going with John Dorsey, was the, hey, maybe Reed didn't like that Dorsey drafted Mahomes,
uh-huh.
or Dorsey didn't like the Reed. They clearly both liked him.
Yes.
But Jesus, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, according to Sam Mellinger's article, is like, well, nope, the only guy I really talked to was Reed. And then Lee Steinberg was given an option of anybody who liked Mahomes the most front of him. He's like, oh, Reed loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's done. We know that Reed loves Mahomes.
Honestly, like, I think that should have been done literally on draft day, because to think that Andy Reed didn't have the power in the organization to pick his quarterback has always been absurd to me. But yes, it's extra dead. You can put a full round in that zombie.
Yes, but then, you know, there's more parts of those conversations when you start going down and talking to them about, you know, who in the organization. And, I find it interesting to know even the little things about, like, who he was dealing with. Because I'm like, hey, so you got this deal done, and it took a while, and there was no GM, so I kind of did it. I said, is it Dorsey that you deal with in any situations? I was like, no. Nah, it was always Brant Tillis for this thing, which meant they were already planning on firing Trip McCracken, so they didn't start negotiating that Mahomes deal at all until they had just axed the old salary cap.
Right.
And then when they bumped up Brant Tillis, that was the only guy he ever dealt with cap stuff. So to me, that signifies the clear point in direction that Brett Veach is not going to handle the numbers. Like, they're going to separate those two jobs, which for me, like, maybe it's reading into it too much, but to me it just continues to solidify that both John Dorsey wanted too much money and handled money poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Seem to be the two biggest reasons for why he's out in Kansas City.
I don't know if we ever talked about the other piece of it that I was sort of unpacking, is that essentially whenever Scott Pioli tried to ruin the organization, I say tried, not actually.
Yeah, no, he does talk about Pioli too.
Whenever Scott Pioli almost ruined the organization, that's whenever Clark Hunt started the system of everyone reports to me. And I think that was the other factor of it all. I think the cap thing, maybe wanting too much money, but I think especially John Dorsey started doing and this came out in the Albert Breer story officially, so that's there too. I think Clark Hunt saw John Dorsey starting to try to do his own thing a little too often, and I think that's the other piece of it that played a part. I don't know how you ask. I don't know if you can ask Clark Hunt, hey, was John Dorsey giving you Scott Pioli flashbacks? Because that would be a good clip of sound.
Yeah, did you feel like it was going down that road again? Because, well, you know, the question to ask him is, why do you feel like you need final cut, essentially? Because you know, with the Chiefs organization, if they're going to trade a first-round pick or draft anyone, like, in the top 10, like, just trade any first-round pick or draft in the top 10, they have to get final approval from Clark Hunt. He's not a scout.
Right.
He's not a coach. Why does he feel like he needs final cut? And if you're asking him that question, that's directly related to Pioli.
Yes.
Because he did not get final cut under Pioli.
Yes.
And after that went down, he felt the need to have that kind of control. Why? Why does he want that oversight? Is it just a lack of trust in any GM forever? Is it because you wanted to make sure you could trust John Dorsey before and then you stopped? Because you look at his first-round picks, there's no reason to just be like, oh, Dorsey, what a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Eric Fisher's not amazing, but go back through that first round, he did fine. He's got a starter in the NFL at left tackle.
Yeah.
D. Ford's had his mostly downs, but did have a double-digit sack season, and he got Marcus Peters. So the first round has not been a disaster for John Dorsey by any means, so why not after a few years where that trust have built?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really thought of that because I've always sort of thought if I was in Clark Hunt's shoes, I would want that set up the same way. Where if nothing else, I wouldn't ever want to be surprised. I think that's my reasoning.
Like if it was Johnny Manziel, you'd be like, "What? Come on, no, we're not doing that."
Or even if it's Johnny Manziel, and you go, "Okay, well, tell me why," and then fine, then still do it. But I don't want to find out it's Johnny Manziel when the commissioner reads his name off the card, like the rest of the world finds out.
To tell him is one thing, but it always came off as, I guess, then that'd be the question, to find out exactly what the final... Is it really just a final approval in the sense that you just want to know before it's happening? So there's somebody ask you at a dinner party the next day,
right?
Hey, so you guys took Patrick Mahomes, huh? Big deal. You've got some information?
Yeah.
Or is it because you actually want to know why they're going to select this person? Which is just... That's a problem with the Chiefs that I don't think we address enough. It's on the field, too. They don't have a streamlined system of organization and control, even on the field.
Right,
He makes the play call. He sends it to the offensive coordinator, who then sends it to the quarterback. That's nuts.
Right, yes.
It should be between two
people. It's insane. Yes, it's insane.
Like, you know, the convoluted system of information. And remember that there was, you know, Matt Derrick and I talked about that. One of the other things that comes up with John Dorsey is they're like, well, they really had a problem with the lack of communication, like the lack of, you know, okay, well, then streamline it.
Yes.
You know, why are we putting so many people into this? Put a guy in charge. Now, Brett Veach has no experience, and they're going to go right back to the drawing board with that. And certainly Andy Reid and Veach have to have a conversation. And there are other people and scouts, and I get it. NFL's complicated, and there are a lot of things. But then having to go through all this, have a conversation with a scout, get with your group, get with the GM, get with the coach, and decide on a player, and then be like, hey, Clark, this cool? It just seems like it's one extra step that kind of slows things down.
At the same time, I wish that step would have been there for Pioli. So the conflict of that.
Because he ran away with it and it was awful.
Yeah, the conflict of that is really interesting. It's something that we could spend a lot of time unpacking. But we're out of time here. So tell everyone again where they can find you.
I'm at T-Bone. I'm a Community American Ballpark. They've got 50-cent hot dogs here, $9 steak, and beer special. We're going to be over 1. Game starts at 1:05, and it's hot, but it's definitely not nearly as hot as it has been the last couple of days. Plus, there's some shady spots, so I highly recommend. But, I mean, oh, it was like last week, a guy pitched lefty in a game. Like, well, it's the 10th, and we had extras last night. We don't want to burn the guys out. He's like, I always wanted to throw lefty. I'm like, great, you're in.
Wow. God, so, independent baseball is so cool.
Just don't know what you're going to see. That's what I like about it.
Fantastic. All right, Cody Tapp, go get that sun-kissed skin we've been talking about.
Will do. Thank you, sir.
Cody Tapp out at Community American Ballpark. Whenever we come back, we're going to talk more Chiefs. I got more stuff to talk about. That's how the show works.
This is Sports Sunday.
I think we did 2 really good hours.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And we also did this hour.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I can't believe this is the last segment. We got like 15 minutes. I got like 3 things we haven't talked about yet. We're going to get to them all, I promise. But first, Drake. Wrapping up shop here on Sports Sunday. Today's felt like a weird show for some reason, but it also feels like it went pretty quickly. I don't really know how that works. But if you've been holding your breath this whole time to asking if I was going to talk about Colin Kaepernick, you better bet I am. Just a little bit, though. And, man, there's been a lot of little, like, Kaepernick, like, blips on the radar recently that I've steered clear from. Because as interesting as I think the story, like, was, the fact that it's still a story is only true because nothing has changed. Which is, you know, because I think it was Levitard that said, like, because, like, Woody Johnson is a coward. Like, that's one of the reasons nothing has changed. And that's true, because they need an actual quarterback, and Kaepernick is out there, and he's better than everything they have by a lot. But the thing that happened recently that became a little bit of a story is that Michael Vick was talking about Colin Kaepernick. He said that Kaepernick should change his hair to help rehabilitate his image, and Vick ended up apologizing for those comments, which I actually don't think he needed to do, but I digress. But that whole thing left me such a sour taste in my mouth, because you're telling, you as Michael Vick, a guy who killed dogs and spent 2 years in jail, you're telling Colin Kaepernick how to rehab his image some of the ways that you did. And I don't care at all what you think about Colin Kaepernick's protest in this way. You can't equate it to running a dogfighting ring. You just can't. That kind of rehab, those are not even comparable as far as image rehab. Not even comparable. So I can't even fathom that. And we'll talk about it a little bit more in a second. But I'm going to first do something that I did not expect to do ever. I'm going to turn 3 minutes of today's show over to Shannon Sharp. He was on Undisputed. That's the show that he does with Skip Bayless. And I just sort of made Shannon Sharp discount Stephen A. Smith in my head. I don't ever watch that show. It's just, I know it exists. But he talked about this and he put it better than I can.
Shannon, let me start with you. Does Vic have a point?
No, he doesn't have a point. And what Michael Vick just did was perpetuate a stereotype that blacks that look a certain way, dressed a certain way, should be judged a certain way. What does Colin Kaepernick's hair have to do with anything? He need to reform his image from what? Some of the media, and even Michael Vick, has convinced himself that what Colin Kaepernick did by taking a knee was equal to, if not worse, than what Michael Vick went to prison for. Michael, you went to prison. You are a convicted felon. You needed to change your image. Colin Kaepernick took a knee.
He took a knee in protest of black and brown unarmed men and women being killed at a disproportionate high rate compared to the percentage in which they represent in America. And the officers that were doing this killing, they were going they were being held unaccountable for their actions. He took a knee. The very country that Colin Kaepernick took a knee in was founded on protest. We keep talking about he was disrespectful of the flag. We have yet to address the issue, what he was trying to bring attention to. Larry Fitzgerald, he has dreads. Does he need to change his image? Kawhi Leonard, on your favorite team, Skip, he has cornrows. Does he need to change his image? No, he does not. Stop perpetuating this stereotype, Michael Vick. My grandmother used to say, boy, sometimes when people get to where they're going, they'll forget where they came from. Michael Vick, you were a convicted felon. Someone gave you a second chance. And you saying that Colin Kaepernick needs to cut his hair to change his appearance, to change the narrative around him. From what? He's never been arrested. He committed no crime. He killed no one. He abused no one. What is the image that he needs to portray? I don't get it. From Michael Vick, you would think, Skip, of all the guys that would understand this man's plight. Michael Vick went to prison for 18 months. He missed 2 years in the NFL. Michael Vick didn't have to tell anybody that he wanted to play again. And it just so happens there's more coincidence than what we really thought. Because guess how old Michael Vick was when he signed with the Philadelphia Eagles? 29.
I think that's really good. I think that's really, really good. And it's something that's getting thrown around a lot now as we continually talk about Kaepernick and people keep saying, oh, give it a month, give it a month, give it a month, give it a month. Now people are going to say, well, wait until somebody gets hurt in training camp. They're going to say, well, wait until somebody gets hurt during the regular season. Dan Orlovsky just signed a contract with the LA Rams. What is going to bring Kaepernick back in the league other than an owner who isn't afraid of the press conference? Because this conversation keeps happening now. These conversations about, well, Kaepernick needs to rebrand himself. He needs to rehab his image. And do you hear that from Michael Vick? Equates the crimes, which I put in quotes, because one of them was a felony, and one of them was a peaceful protest. You can't put those in the same category. And I had no idea that Shannon Sharp had that in him. So hearing that was a much of a surprise to me, as I'm sure it was to most of you. I think he started and ended that conversation in about 2.5 minutes. It's so incredibly frustrating to see the tone in which we take to have these conversations about image and how Kaepernick needs to come out and say that he is willing to take a backup role or to take a lesser salary or whatever. Because a lot is being pushed on what people expect Kaepernick to be looking for. People keep saying, well, he's never said that he'd take a backup job or a backup salary. He's never said that. Michael Vick didn't have to say that whenever he got out of jail for earning a dogfighting ring. And I am not upset that Michael Vick got another chance in the NFL. The NFL is always going to be a place for second chances and for having a chance to rehabilitate your image. But my problem now isn't that Kaepernick isn't being allowed to rehabilitate his image.
It's that the common mindset is that he needs to. And it's just an ignorant way of looking at it. All right, let's talk about Kirk Cousins now, right? That's logical. Is that where we go from here? Oh, no, let's talk about that. Let's do that Sean Spicer story. That's funny. That'll make us laugh. Because I wanted to save the Kaepernick thing because it's very serious. And now we just have like some show hanging out. And we could talk about the fact that Kirk Cousins is going to get paid a ton of money by hopefully the Broncos and then not win anything. But we're going to leave that aside for now. Because this story came out yesterday. And it's about, so Sean Spicer, I can't remember what his official title was. He was the mouthpiece for the White House. He resigned. Here is a three paragraphs of an amazing, amazing story about Sean Spicer. Listen to this. Less than a month into his new job, White House press secretary, there's his job, White House press secretary Sean Spicer needed to keep his food and drink cold. He wanted a mini fridge. I've been there. I had a mini fridge in my newspaper office at school. I have a mini fridge in my room now at my house. The article continues. He dispatched a top aide to a nearby executive office building where junior research employees are crammed into a room surviving on Lean Cuisine frozen lunches. Mr. Spicer wants your icebox, the aide said, according to people familiar with the incident. They refused to give it up. So Mr. Spicer waited until sundown, after his young staffers had left, to take matters into his own hands. He was spotted by a fellow White House official lugging the icebox down the White House driveway after 8 p.m. That's amazing. He wanted a mini fridge, so he went over to like the group of interns who are working for him and said, give it to me, to these people who don't have like the mess privileges of the White House, apparently. Give it to me. They said, bleep you. This is our mini fridge. You can't have it. So then he went and stole it like the villain from Pink Panther. It's an unbelievably good story. So I'm looking forward to Melissa McCarthy eventually dragging around a mini fridge. Because that's going to happen eventually now. I'm excited for tomorrow, man. I'm sure that the press conferences will be here on 810 all over. And I'm excited for the questions that will be asked and for the clips that will be had. Like I said with Cody, I want people to ask Clark Hunt specific things about John Dorsey's job performance. Because if someone says, hey, did John Dorsey screw up the cap? Did he screw up roster management? Was he a pain to work with? Was he blah, 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 blah? If those questions get asked sort of back to back to back to back, eventually Clark Hunt is going to say something interesting. He's going to give you some insight into what actually happened between him and John Dorsey. I think we have a lot of facts and a lot of good reporting to go on, but I'd like to hear it from Clark Hunt. If you just say, hey, why did you fire John Dorsey? He's going to speak in vague terms that will get us nowhere. Specific pointed questions will get some interesting results if the people at the press conference tomorrow go in that direction. I'm excited to hear from Brett Veach because he is largely a nameless, faceless figure. The photographers at Brett Veach's press conference will be doing the Lord's work for every Chiefs blog on the planet that has been running articles about Brett Veach without knowing what he looks like. Again, he has been kind of a spectral figure to me.
It's like a shell game.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's just somebody else moved around with like a fake mustache.
Okay, yes, perfect. Yeah, at this point,
his office just has a picture of Andy Reid behind the desk.
Ooh, I like that. I like the idea that he is a balloon with some of those glasses on it, with the nose and the mustache, like the big eyebrows, that Andy Reid just holds the balloon and talks into his hand.
Yeah.
Like, hello, I'm Brett Veach. Excuse, Coach. Coach Reed. We see you.
No, there's no Coach Reed here. Just me, Brent Veach, the balloon man, with the disguise on.
I'm very excited for that. For that press conference.
What happens if somebody pops the balloon though when he's doing that?
And he goes, "Oh, damn." Then Andy Reid comes over and goes,
"We're gonna hire the next man up."
Hi, I'm the new general manager.
I gotta say, those are really good balloon sound
effects. Right? I know.
That was amazing.
I impressed myself just then. I didn't know I had that in me. I don't know. I was capable of having that good of a balloon sound effect. All right, I just made a general manager. This is exciting. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, Beards McFly, for running the board. My name is Joshua Briscoe. Danny Klingscale now sliding in to begin baseball tonight pregame. I'm going to go run for my life. Bye, Mom.